Welcome to the Midday with Vicki and Norman and all kinds of other people, too. We'll get into that later.
Well, we have a special edition of the Midday today that invites some of our colleagues here at Wisconsin Public Radio and to see what we do and to share the music, which is going to be provided by pianist Eugene Alkalay.
Well, we do actually defies description, and so rather than go through the obligatory describer, we decided just to have people come in and see it for better or worse. Better, I'm sure.
And
see
trapped
what happens.
Now.
Yes, there's no escape. There will be a slight exit fee, however, for everybody. So bear that in mind.
Our pianist comes from the UW-Platteville, actually, with quite beginning in Romania and Colombia, and we'll hear about that along the way. Has a new CD that we're going to hear first. The CD is called Lyrical List, and from that,
we will hear, and that's a list, of course, L-I-S-Z-T.
Yes.
We will hear from Tristan and Isolde, right?
Right. This is Isolde's Liebestod. This is, of course, Wagner's treatment of it, and we'll hear the CD recording of Eugene Alkalay playing this from his new CD.
We've followed Eugene Alkali from CD to that very same pianist live right here in our Buck studio. It's a special edition of the Midday with Vicki and Norman and our guest. And I think the real liability of doing a show like this before an audience is that sooner or later, word will get out that we get paid for listening to great performers do what they do.
Well, Eugene, the first piece you played, just to identify what we heard, mm-hmm. was Isolde's Liebestod, Wagner's arrangement of that, mm-hmm. Liszt's arrangement of the Wagner.
Yeah, that was on the CD, yeah.
On the CD. And then live, we heard the second movement from the second piano sonata by Chopin.
Right.
That's the one that has the famous funeral march.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, and that moment, actually, I'm going to probably play it in England as an encore piece.
The funeral march?
No, not
the whole.
Not the funeral march.
The scherzo. The
scherzo, yeah. I mean, if I want
to... auspicious event.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do that to them, but yeah, the scherzo. And then, in fact, I'm playing the other Chopin sonata in my London concerts, the B minor Opus 58. So that's one of the actual pieces in the program.
I'm sure they'll love it.
I hope so.
Well, that's one of several concerts you're going to be playing this summer. I just wanted to talk a little bit about your background.
Sure.
You were born in Romania.
Right. Yeah, I was born in Romania last millennium, which was a long time ago, very long time ago. But I grew up there, and in '82 I met actually by mail. I sent some of my compositions and tapes to Lenny Bernstein. And he was the one who helped me get out of communist Romania and to the States.
Hmm. And how old were you at that time, roughly?
In 82, I would have been 15 and a half, which will tell you how old I am now.
Well, that's not where I was going with that. But we had a pianist on just last week from Romania,
mm-hmm.
Peter Takac,
oh, really?
Who had quite an experience getting out of Romania in that as soon as he did, and he was quite an accomplished young pianist when he did so. I don't remember exactly the year now. But suddenly, well, it took him 2 years to get out, for all the paperwork to clear. And suddenly all of his performances, all of his music were verboten in Romania. He was persona non grata.
Did you
have that experience?
No, because I think I was too young, because what happened was I just left on spring break to meet my ailing grandmother. And they didn't make any problems. My parents actually, my mother came with me. My dad stayed behind, which was kind of a safety net, I think. And then following when Bernstein decided to help my education career, I think in a sense Bernstein's name served as a protective.
Oh. Sure.
I think
sure.
Because they everybody knows Lenny Bernstein, and they didn't want to have bad publicity. And so I think while my parents were interrogated by the Securitate a few times, they, largely left us alone, and the Romanians were actually quite nice to me, the consul, and they didn't make problems. So.
So what was it like meeting Lenny Bernstein?
Lenny? Oh, I was overwhelmed. I mean, I just was so surprised that he should take an interest in me out of all the gazillion pianist composers. And he was very warm, very unpredictable.
Unpredictable. I've heard that. Yes. Now, what was your experience? Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that he was going to say one day, okay, my boy, what do you want to do with your life? You want to go back to Romania? Sure. No. No way. No, I said I want to come to the States. And so he unpredictably decided to just take me under his wing. Mm. I didn't expect that.
Well, that's a pleasant surprise.
I know, yeah.
And you came to Indiana? Was that the first place you
right.
Landed
IU was my
in
first
the US?
School. Mm-hmm. And then I got my undergrad degrees from there, and then I went to Curtis to study with Ned Roram and Seymour Lipkin. And I got a diploma from there, and then on to New York and Juilliard for grad studies, graduates.
So is the coast clear to go back to Romania now? I mean, just to visit?
I actually visited the first time in 25 years this past summer.
And how was that?
It was a very strange experience, because on the one hand, many places are the same. Streets, buildings. On the other hand, cell phones, internet, mm-hmm. everybody speaking English, unheard of 25 years ago.
Well, it's different here than it was a week ago, so that's not bad.
But yeah, so it was very weird experience, but it was fun to see.
It's interesting that you started the live portion of today's broadcast with Chopin, who was, of course, famous as an emigre from Poland, and he was in Paris when conditions made it impossible for him to return to Poland in 1831. He was barely older than you, only 20 or so at the time, 21. Do you ever feel any of that longing in Chopin for something left behind?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of his music has this haunting quality, and I think some of his meditations, especially this slow movement I'm gonna play next, in the B minor sonata. I mean, there, and of course, there's his large output of patriotic.
Well, all the polonaises, of course, Polish processional dances turned into piano music, and some of them.
But even when it's not overtly Polish, I think there is a haunting, yearning quality in his, some of his movements.
It does seem to come out in a style uniquely his own.
Yeah. So, but that was my experience, and then I was in the Pittsburgh area after Juilliard for a while, my first position, and now I'm here at the UW system.
Platteville. UW-Platteville.
Yes.
And what are you doing there?
I'm teaching piano, basically, and I'm teaching chamber music and some accompanying, some piano pedagogy, and I do have two very good piano students, for which I'm grateful.
So how long would it take you to teach one of them the piece you just played for us?
Well, that depends on how long they'd be practicing it.
It all comes down to practice, doesn't it?
Yeah. How long did you practice it?
This one, I actually learned the notes back in the 90s at Juilliard. I never performed it, but I learned the notes. And I often do that. I like to learn something, then put it away to marinate in there for a while, and then perform it. So I think it took me probably to bring back, about less than, maybe four or five days just to bring back. But when I first learned it, of course, it took longer.
Eugene Alkalay from UW-Platteville. We're going to hear a slow movement now, the Largo, from Sonata Number 3 in B minor by Chopin.
Anything you want to say before you play it?
It's, I think, one of his most beautiful... Sorry. It's, I think, one of his most beautiful meditations, and very haunting. And I hope it's not too long, at 10 minutes.
We'll wait.
Thank you.
a very meditative piece. Almost got a feeling of kind of eavesdropping on your quiet thoughts there. The Largo.
Very intimate, yeah.
Yes, Largo from the Sonata No. 3 by Chopin. And our pianist today, Jean Alcolay.
Do you ever actually get in a mood and think, I'm just going to play this piece for fun because it suits my mood? I mean, I don't mean in a concert, but at home.
I try to actually, yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll confess it's more that I feel I need to always practice performing my pieces, because it's one thing to just practice, you know, in separate sections or passages, mm-hmm. and it's totally another thing to run it. And I think that's what I also tell my students, you know, that get in the mood and run, mm-hmm. yeah, run the piece so that you see how it feels like. And then you, of course, it's a totally different experience than when you practice. So it's practicing performing. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I play for my wife. You know, there's a fireplace going and she's grading papers and in her favorite armchair, and the piano is right there, the two pianos, and I just play through and she kind of listens in, and I distract her from her papers.
Yeah. So you can do worse than marrying a pianist.
She's a historian, yeah.
You're a composer too.
Yes, I am. I haven't written much lately because I've been focusing so much on performance and chamber music and teaching, but I did get degrees from Juilliard and Curtis. I studied with Ned Roram at
mm-hmm. well-known at, composer.
Yes,
Curtis, thanks. Yeah, and at Juilliard, I was actually with Milton Babbitt,
also very well known
yes.
for different reasons. Yeah, well,
yes. Mr. 12 Tone.
You might say notorious in some circles. Yes.
Yeah, and actually, I was with Uncle Milton when I wrote. It was when Bernstein, soon after Bernstein died, in 1990. It was my first year at Juilliard, and I decided to write a few miniatures in memory of Leni Bernstein. And they are neo-romantic, more or less. It's interesting because people ask me, well, you studied with Milton Babbitt. I mean, his music is anything but neo-romantic, at least in conventional wisdom. How did that mitigate with your style, which is more tonal? And the answer is, I mean, Milton never imposed his own style on his students. I mean, he taught by asking questions. I would say, but Meister, does this work here? Well, I don't know, my boy. You'd have to hear it. You know, he's very circumspect. So, whereas Ned Roram was opinionated in the best sense. He'd tell you straight on if he felt this something didn't work. But anyway, so Milton never imposed his own style on me. And so I was still running in my own idiom. And he taught by asking questions. What are you going to do from now on? Where are you going to take it from here, and why? Why are you doubling the winds there with the second violin? You know, so kind of asking questions, a different way of teaching.
And, of course, Bernstein himself wrote some miniatures and some anniversary pieces. But
yeah.
These, you have three that you're going to play for us. Mm-hmm. Are there descriptions of each one that you'd like to offer?
Yeah, yeah. The first one is sort of, I might not play them in order, actually, for programming purposes, but the first time I'm going to play is sort of dreamy, kind of an introduction, and it starts, you won't hear a key. Thank you. So that's kind of a slow intro to the set. And then I'm going to play the fifth one now, which my wife calls the monster. And it's sort of an ostinato with heavy octaves in the bass, and he just kind of plods along. So it ends in an A minor triad, and also in the middle of the piece, there's that moment where I go to A as a matter of contrast, and the monster is in the background lurking. So it's sort of A-ish, kind of tonal center. And the last one I'm going to play today is a little toccata, which is kind of a joke, maybe Lenny's playful side, unpredictable, mischievous, whimsical kind of...
Does it take longer to practice your own stuff?
I don't like my practicing my own stuff. But yes, I do, actually. I had to memorize it, actually. Especially some of the slow moments, because I just had to consciously memorize them.
And so you had a sense that these pieces express aspects of the personality of Bernstein, or your reaction to him?
My reaction, at times, his personality. I just kept thinking of his winking and his, you know, he'd be very warm and affectionate one day, and then very... I'd have to get out of his way the next day because he was maybe in a bad mood, and we all get those, and maybe a bad review or something. So I mean, but other times I'd play. Once I was at a party at Ann Arbor, actually, late at night after a party, after the ritual Lenny backstage. There's a party to which he shows up 2 hours late, and at around it was about 3 a.m, and I had had a bit, And I was ready to go to sleep and said, "Eugene, come over here. I want to hear Beethoven Opus 111.
Oh, Beethoven Opus 111. That's
at this hour?
Number 32.
Come on, you can do
32.
It. And then I played it. And it didn't go that well.
Well, he'd been drinking also, so that helped.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But then he comes over, he gives me a kiss right in the mouth, like you usually do. And he says, "Eugene, that was the best performance I ever heard of one."
But it would have been hard to repeat, too.
So there's an encore piece, which I don't know if there's time for, but it's the Schumann Novelette, if we have time.
Well, actually, you'll probably have to come back to play that.
For next time.
You know, there's a showbiz axiom that says always leave them wanting more.
Okay.
And so not that there was any danger, you know, but today that definitely will be the case.
Sure.
But you have some other performances other than this one coming up.
Yeah, I'm playing, let's see, I have two performances in London. One is at St. James, a return from last year. The other one is at Beethoven Piano Society of Europe, which is again a return engagement from last year. This one is called Pianists of the World Series, and I'll be playing a few of my own pieces, and it's at St. Martin in the Fields in Trafalgar Square. And then I have one in Chicago before that as a warm-up.
And then your debut in Paris in
2010. Yeah, I just found out I'm playing in Paris.
All right. Well, you got a program worked up for that one yet? How far in advance do you work?
I do not have a program lined up for that one. I haven't really thought of what I want to play. And they told me they only need the program the March before.
Yeah.
So
that's so. How spontaneous can you get with a program? Do you ever throw things out at the last minute and substitute?
I try not to do that. For instance, I already know what I'm playing at the Chazen in September.
Ah, excellent.
And it'll be the B minor sonata, probably.
Chopin
B minor, and then some Brahms waltzes.
Well, that's something to
that'll
show up
treat.
For.
But
we're taking kind of a poll. What do you think of our piano here? It's a Mason and Hamlin piano that we have.
Once you get used to the touch and uh-huh. how to play soft, I think it's predictable in a good way, in that you know you get used to it, and it's so the piano is quite decent actually, and it's very well in tune. And I'll tell you, I've played on a lot worse than this. So Vicky, when he told me, I was bracing for something a lot more drastic.
We don't want to promise too much.
You have to say you certainly made it sound good today.
Well,
so.
I do have one question about you are a Steinway artist, mm-hmm. and how and when did that come about, and what does that entail?
That came about in 2005, after my applying for it a little while before that. And what that entails is it's a largely honorary distinction. You join a roster of some celebrated pianists, such as Rubinstein and Horowitz and mm-hmm. other people. Even Billy Joel is on it, actually.
That's the big time.
Yeah, but basically what that means is you have free practice facilities anywhere you go that there is a Steinway Hall, a Steinway representative. So when I'm in London, I can practice at Steinway Hall.
Hmm.
And if I'm in town, or if I'm in Siberia and there is a Steinway representative in Siberia, I can, you know, avail myself. The other good thing is, for instance, for my recording, which I did, the CD which I did at UWP this past September, I can rent a Steinway free of charge. They will give you a Steinway free of charge for any performances you do, in any location. Cartage is a different story, but the rental is free. So that's, you know, kind of a help. Largely, other than that, it's just, I'm humbled to be in that roster because it's an honor.
Well, congratulations
thanks.
For that.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming over
Thank
from Platteville.
Thanks for
today
having
to join
me.
Us.
Yeah. Thanks, that was fun.
And thanks to our audience here who
Thank
have
you.
Joined us, our colleagues,
Wisconsin
Public Radio.